Hello, and welcome to the fourth and final lecture of Week 5. In this lecture, we'll be taking a look at Alexander the Great and his legacy. Our question for today, could a 10-year-old boy tame the fiercest of stallions? Well, according to the ancient biographer Plutarch, a horse trader approached King Philip of Macedonia with a beautiful stallion for sale named Bucephalus. However, none of Philip's servants could ride the wild horse. If anyone tried to mount him, the stallion reared high into the air and threw him off. He would not allow no one to come near him. Disappointed at the loss of so fine an animal, Philip prepared to send the trader away. Before the trader could leave, however, Philip's young son Alexander scoffed at the grooms. Only 10 years old, he claimed that he would be able to tame the fierce steed. Philip did not think it possible, but he agreed to allow Alexander to try. The young prince walked slowly to the horse, whispering calming words and turning him to face the sun. Of all the people present, only young Alexander had noticed that Bucephalus was scared of his shadow. Once the horse was facing the sun and thus could no longer see his shadow, he allowed Alexander to climb on his back, and the two took off at a gallop. Philip, amazed at his son's cleverness, proclaimed, O my son, look thee out a kingdom equal to and worthy of thyself, for Macedonia is too little for thee. In the years that followed the Peloponnesian War, a new power arose and took control of Greece. That power was Macedonia, a kingdom located just north of Greece. The Macedonian rise to power was led by a king named Philip II and his son, Alexander the Great. Now, most Greeks considered the Macedonians somewhat backward. Macedonians lived in villages rather than cities, and spoke a form of Greek that was almost unintelligible to other Greek speakers. When Philip II took the throne in 359 BC, however, Macedonia's fortune changed. One of Philip's first actions as king was reorganizing the Macedonian army. He adopted the phalanx system used by other Greeks, but he gave his soldiers much longer spears than others used. He also included larger bodies of cavalry and archers than most city-states used in their armies. With his newly organized army, Philip set out to conquer Greece. Only a few city-states, including Athens and Thebes, seemed to realize the danger of the so he faced little opposition. The Macedonians quickly crushed the armies that stood against them in battle, and in time they conquered every major city-state in Greece except Sparta. Philip's conquest might have continued, but he was assassinated in 336 BC. His title and his plans for conquest fell to his son Alexander. Though very young, only 20 years old, when he became king, Alexander had been trained to rule almost from birth. He had learned both warfare and politics from several teachers, his father, his clever mother, and the philosopher Aristotle. When his father was killed, Alexander was both willing and able to take over the leadership of his kingdom. Almost as soon as Alexander took over the kingdom, he was faced with revolts in Greece. He immediately set out to reestablish his control there, using harsh measures to show the Greeks that he would not tolerate rebellion. For example, when Thebes rebelled, Alexander totally crushed its army, sold the people into slavery, and burned the city to the ground. With Greece firmly under his control, Alexander decided to build himself an empire. In 334 BC, he led his army into Asia to take on the Persians. Alexander's army was relatively small, but his soldiers were well trained and fiercely loyal to him. In contrast, the Persian army was huge but disorganized. Within a year, Alexander's army had won a major victory against the Persians in Asia Minor. From there, Alexander led his troops south into Phoenicia and Egypt, two territories ruled by Persia. In both places, Alexander was welcomed and praised as a liberator. In fact, the people of Egypt were so grateful that he had driven the Persians out that they named him their new pharaoh. From Egypt, Alexander marched into what is now Iraq. In a huge battle near the city of Gaugamela, the Macedonians destroyed the Persian army and caused the Persian emperor Darius III to flee. Darius was later murdered by one of his own officers. With the defeat of Alexander was essentially master of the Persian world. His troops marched to Persepolis, one of Persia's capitals, and burned it to the ground as a sign of their victory. Alexander, however, was not yet satisfied with the size of his empire. He led his army deeper into Asia, winning more victories against the peoples of Central Asia. Still wanting more, he led his army to the Indus, perhaps intending to conquer India. His soldiers, however, had had enough. When they refused to proceed any farther from home, Alexander was forced to turn back to the west. The empire Alexander had built was the largest that the world had ever seen, but he did not rule that empire for very long. In 323 BC, while in the city of Babylon, Alexander fell ill. After a few days, he died. At the time of his death, Alexander was only 33 years old. Alexander died without naming an heir. Within a short time, his generals began to fight among themselves for power. In the end, the empire was divided among three of the most powerful generals, who began to kings. Antigonus became king of Macedonia and Greece, Seleucus took over the Persian Empire, and Ptolemy ruled Egypt. By bringing together a number of diverse peoples in his empire, Alexander helped create a new type of culture. This new culture blended elements of Greek civilization with ideas from Persia, Egypt, Central Asia, and other regions. In other words, the civilization was no longer purely Greek or Hellenic. Hellas was the name Greeks used for their country. As a result, historians call it Hellenistic or Greek-like. The blending of cultures in Alexander's empire was no accident. Alexander made a conscious effort to bring people and ideas from different places together. For example, he married not one but two Persian princesses and encouraged his soldiers to marry Persian women as well. He appointed officials from various cultures to help rule the empire. He also built dozens of new cities, most of them named Alexandria, and encouraged Greek settlers to... The most famous of the new cities Alexander built was Alexandria, Egypt. Chosen as the capital of Egypt after Alexander's death, Alexandria was located at the mouth of the Nile where it met the Mediterranean. This location was ideal for trade, and at one time the city's harbor was the busiest in the world. With the money the trade brought, the Alexandrians built great palaces and streets lined with grand monuments. The city was also home to centers of culture and learning. The museum, a temple to the spirit of creativity, held many works of art. The Library of Alexandria contained works on philosophy, literature, history, and the sciences. Alexandria remained a center of culture and learning long after the Hellenistic rulers of Egypt fell from power. Although Alexandria was one of the largest trading centers in the Hellenistic world, it was not the only one. Cities in Egypt, Persia, and Central Asia became trading centers. Traders went to Africa, Arabia, and India. In addition to goods from these regions, traders brought back... Among the ideas they carried were the teachings of Judaism, which influenced societies throughout the Hellenistic world. The shift from Hellenic Greece to the Hellenistic world brought many drastic changes to people's lives. Perhaps the most obvious change was in how people were governed. The city-state was no longer the main political unit of the Greek world, now replaced by the kingdom. Traditional Greek forms of government, such as democracy, had given way to monarchy. The lives of women also changed significantly during the Hellenistic period. In most earlier Greek city-states, women had few rights. After Alexander, however, their lives began to improve. For the first time, some women gained the rights to receive an education and own property. Legally, though, women were still not considered equal to men. The blending of cultures in the Hellenistic world brought significant changes to society. Some of the most dramatic changes were caused by the exchange of ideas by people from different cultures. This exchange led to new advances in philosophy and science. As Greek influence spread through Alexander's empire, so too did interest in Greek philosophy. Contact with other cultures led to changes in classical philosophy, which absorbed and reacted to ideas from these other cultures. Partly as a result of these changes, new schools of philosophy developed in the Hellenistic world. One new school of philosophy created in the Hellenistic world was Cynicism. Its students, called Cynics, rejected the ideas of pleasure, wealth, and social responsibility. Instead, they believed that people should live according to nature, with none of humanity's created institutions. As a result, many Cynics gave away all their possessions, begged for food, and lived in public buildings. Another school of philosophy, the Epicureans, taught that people should seek out pleasure, which they equated with good, and try to avoid pain, which they considered evil. One way to find pleasure, the Epicureans believed, was to develop close friendships with people who shared similar ideas. The most influential of the philosophy was Stoicism. The Stoics placed great emphasis on reason, self-discipline, emotional control, and personal morality. Unlike the Cynics, they did not believe that people should withdraw from society in order to find happiness. Instead, they argued that people should identify their proper role in society and strive to fulfill that role. Art and literature likewise changed during the Hellenistic period. Even more than earlier Greek artists had, Hellenistic artists learned to convey emotion and movement in their works, especially sculpture. In addition, women became much more common as the subject of art. Most earlier Greek statues had depicted men. Women also became more common subjects in literature. Love stories, for example, became a popular form for the first time. Unlike earlier literature that dealt largely with the actions of the gods, Hellenistic writings often focus on common events in people's everyday lives. The Hellenistic period witnessed tremendous advances in science and technology. Egypt in particular saw huge science. Among the great scholars who lived there was Euclid, who formulated many of the ideas about geometry that we still learn about today. Egypt was also the home of Eratosthenes. He's best known for calculating the size of the world. Using careful observations and simple geometry, Eratosthenes arrived at a figure that was remarkably close to the actual circumference of the globe. Other Hellenistic scientists studied the movement of the stars through the sky and the makeup and inner workings of the human body. Many of the Hellenistic period's greatest advances in technology were the work of one gifted man, Archimedes. One of the ancient world's greatest inventors, Archimedes used his knowledge of mathematics and physics to create devices to make life easier. For example, he developed a compound pulley that could lift heavy loads. He also invented a mechanical screw for drawing water out of a ship's hold or out of a deep well. In a feat designed to prove the power of machines, Archimedes once used levers and pulleys to lift a fully loaded ship clear out of the water. Other Hellenistic inventors were not so ambitious as Archimedes, but were very clever in their own right. One lesser-known inventor, for example, built a tiny steam engine that he used to power mechanical toys. Such devices were representative of the Hellenistic fascination with mechanics and technology. Here is your assignment. 1. What lands did Alexander the Great conquer? 2. Why did Alexander destroy Thebes? 3. Why do you think Alexander agreed to head home rather than forcing his army to continue into India? 4. What does the word Hellenistic mean, and what is the Alexander form called Hellenistic? 5. How did Alexander encourage the blending of cultures in his empire? 6. What made Alexandria such an impressive city? 7. What new schools of philosophy developed in the Hellenistic world? What did each school teach? 8. How was Hellenistic art different from earlier Greek art? 9. Which Hellenistic thinker do you think made the most impressive achievement? Support your answer. Thank you very much for listening to this lecture, and I hope to see you again in week 6. Goodbye.